session number 23222, Rule 1.
Colonel Sir William Bolton, Reel 1.
Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your family background?
The answer is no.
Did you do any pre-military training when you were at school?
Well, I was in the corps at Eton. Now, you had to be. And I think you when you got into the out of the lower school, I think you more or less had to start then. And one did a lot of drill. I remember being drilled by a fierce guard sergeant from Windsor. And one used to, it was very boring at that time because it included a week's camp at the end of the summer half. Of course, it what one looked on it as a week of lost holiday.
Do you remember what was in the syllabus of training apart from the foot drill?
No, I don't remember any at all. You just turned up when you had to, and you marched or you went off into the country on some sort of scheme and did what you were told. And I don't remember a word of. The first time I can remember anything about qualifications was sort of getting a Certificate A after I think left Eton.
Do you remember anything about what you did on your camps, your annual camps?
Well, I think one was out on exercises. A good deal of the time. The thing that's in my mind was, well, dozens of other schools at the same. It was a very big camp he went to, usually sometimes on Salisbury Plain. And there was always a frightful rouse between Eton and the other schools. And we were attacked a good deal, but the one advantage we had was our contingent was very much bigger than anybody else's. And so, quite frankly, I thought that was rather fun at the time. And it stood out in my mind rather more than the exercises we did.
You were the big battalion?
Yeah, well, I think, yes, I suppose we were the number there. Might have been 200 or 300.
Could you explain then how it was that you got connected to the Essex Yeomanry?
Yes, well, I mean, I lived in Essex. I was born and brought up at Braxted Park, which, as you said, you lived near Malden. It's only 5 miles from Malden.
Up near Totham.
Near what?
Near Great Totham.
Yeah, quite close, yes. And one met people, I think, others who'd joined it, and I mean, things. I joined it in 1935. I think, you know, things were. I mean, it looked as though war wasn't impossible even at that time. Things weren't very happy. Germany, Hitler, and all the rest of it. And there it was. I suppose sort of suggestion, recommendation from others, some sort of who'd been in it for some time. Come on, Tess. Go on. Sit. Go on. Good dog.
Can you remember anything specific which persuaded you that there might be another war in the...
I don't think so, no.
Was it a matter of the general atmosphere of the times?
It was, I think, partly that. The other thing was, I mean, I think the idea was that it was it's quite good, a sort of social idea. You know, you've got a smart uniform, a full dress thing, quite expensive to buy, but you looked very smart when you went to a dance or something. there was a social element in it.
Did you have any ideas about how the next war might be fought in terms of the tactics and techniques?
No, I don't think so. I think one realised there was going to be a lot of bombing one way and another. There was nothing sort of secret about that. And it looked as though we were very slow in rearming. I think 1935 there was an effort to start some rearmament, but it became clear that Germany was becoming a very formidable country militarily.
Do you remember if at that time you had any thoughts about the possibility of Italy being an enemy power?
I think there was a thought, because when they seized in Africa and so on,
Abyssinia,
and obviously they had a sort of big military build up and presence, which of course there was very unpopular here. I mean, a lot of I suppose the idea was that they this was a potential threat, possibly. I don't think it worried one very much, but I think it was a factor.
What was the Essex Yeomanry like when you joined it? How was it organised, and what was its strength and equipment?
Well, it had been cavalry, and it became gunners about I think in the late 20s or something of that sort. And the equipment, of course, was First World War, sort of 18 pounders and 4 or 5 howitzers. We had no the horses, there were no horses, they had gone with the cavalry. And they were more or less lorries we had as towers. There was no, our towers weren't specifically made for the purpose. It was pretty ramshackle, really.
What was the strength of it? Was it well recruited?
There were various centres. I remember there was Colchester, Chelmsford, Brentwood, all had parties of, when you joined at one of these centres. And I'm trying to remember these sort of official strengths. I think it must have been, sort of 300 or 400 at least, altogether, possibly more, but I can't look at without, might possibly find it in the war history, but difficult to answer that accurately offhand.
Do you remember if it was well recruited when you joined?
It wasn't bad. It got better as time went on towards the war. And I think I was at, I started at Colchester, but then we at the Walden, there was a headquarters. And it was pretty good then.
What was your first appointment when you joined?
Second lieutenant. I got a commission as a result of doing Certificate A. That was before I joined.
You'd got that at the Corps, hadn't you? You took Certificate A when you were at the Corps. Or was that at Cambridge?
I think it was when I was at Cambridge. I remember awful things that stand out in my mind. I had to go from home at Braxted, somewhere near Bedford, for an examination. And at that time, I failed that. And I think I'd left Eton by then. And I had to do it again. I succeeded.
Had you been...
I'm not sure one that could do it at its public school.
Had you been in the Corps when you were at Cambridge?
No.
But you got Certificate A, and that was the requirement. Did you know any gunnery when you joined the yeomanry?
Well, only the gunners who were in it already. And all territorials, of course. Except the adjutant.
What was the main sort of training that the yeomanry was doing when you joined them?
Well, you at your sort of point, you were a place where you went to. You had to turn up about once a week or a fortnight, it may be. I can't quite remember what one did, because I think you could start learning a bit about the mathematical part of gunnery, which of course is very important. But you couldn't do much training, because a lot of this was during the winter. And then when it came to the, of course, once a year you had the fortnight's regimental training, and which you were expected to do at least a week. It's sometimes difficult to do the whole fortnight. And those camps used to alternate. One was a firing camp when you shot, and the other was somewhere else with pleasant surroundings, but you could do a lot of training in mathematics and positioning of guns and so on and so forth, but no shooting.
Who was doing that sort of technical instruction with you on those camps? Were there regular instructors?
Yeah, there would be regular instructors, yes. And shooting, I'm not sure there were any at the others.
When you did the firing camp, what kind of shooting were you practicing?
Well, it was invariably, well, it was really, I mean, there were two aspects of it, as there obviously had to be. One was the positioning of guns, the sort of ideal positions for them. And the other was getting the guns, the second part was getting the guns ranged at some chosen angle. I mean, somebody in action would be probably the chap up at the observation post who would want to start firing a particular direction, and he would say, I want the guns to point on a particular compass bearing. And it's most important to be able to get the guns all parallel, firing in that, on that exact line. And when that was done, then we went on to the final thing of choosing some target. And of course, the next important thing was getting at that target by the system of ranging. You could never hope to hit it to the first shot. And you aimed to fire a couple of shots in quick succession, one beyond the target and one below. And then you narrowed the bracket as you got nearer. That was not too difficult, as the guns were directly behind you, but there was an acute problem. if the guns were here, and the OP was where you are sitting, and I've got it wrong, the guns were out at an angle, and they were, their line was sort of across here, because it was remarkably difficult to get proper ranging shots at an angle of that sort. And there was quite a, I mean, that always was a, some people were much better than others.
Working out the deflection?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That must have required not only mathematical skill, but very good map reading.
Exactly. Mm. Yes, and I mean, that, you know, became more and more important as time went on.
What did you think of the 18 pounder as a gun? What sort of range would you get from it, and rate of fire and accuracy?
I honestly don't remember. It was one had never seen a gun firing before, and it made quite a bang and so on. But I can't remember any great impression of it, and it was of course quick firing. because it had a shell, was affixed to the case and so on, and it just bang in, bang, and in fact it was obviously quicker firing than a 25-pounder would be. The howitzers, I don't know if we ever had those actually at camp, because that was a much heavier shell. But I don't remember actually shooting with those.
Did you actually act as a gun number on occasion to do the drills, get familiar with the weapon?
Oh yes, constantly. I mean, I didn't myself as an officer, but I'd be the nearest would be what GPO, gun position officer, and you'd be responsible for seeing that the drill was being done properly.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, there were, I mean, there was a whole series of orders you had to give in a particular order, you see. And
got to get the sequence right.
Yes.
You were saying that as time went on, more and more men joined the regiment.
They gradually, I think, the recruiting improved.
What sort of people were you attracting into the yeomanry?
Well, a lot of them were a sort of a farmer type and their families. And they're a very decent sort of chap, most of them. In you know, fairly decent jobs, a lot of them. Some of them were sons of well-to-do farmers and I mean, I don't think I can elaborate much on that, but they're a very good type of person. And continued, of course, after the war began, when we got reinforcements from all over the place. But I think the tradition that has been created by the type of man who was there continued, and I think it was very important, and the tradition was caught on by fresh recruits at a later stage.
What happened then in 1939 when the order for embodiment went out?
Well, I was in France at the time. I think it may have been a day or so before the war was actually declared, but it got home, and we were mobilised on Chelmsford. And we were there about a month, I think, and the training was very limited, because all we could do was to sort of take the equipment as we had on up and down the roads and so on, and possibly getting a few places where you could put some guns out. We did what we can. But there was no firing or anything like that. And then we went off to Nottingham, Southall. We were at Southall until February.
What were you doing up there?
Well, much the same thing. There was no firing. My recollection is pretty hazy there, but I think it must have been the same thing of going out, getting guns on line and make them, you know, putting them on the right angle and so on. I can't remember actually a sort of special training on the mathematical side. I very, very little recollection of it. We were kept busy, there's quite no doubt about that.
Were you still a gun position officer at that time?
No, I was a troop commander. I think I was a gun position officer at least one of the shooting camps at that pre-war period.
How many guns were there in your troop?
Four.
It was still the 18-pounder.
Yes. Yeah. Which we had up till about until we went to the desert in the autumn of 1940.
Can you remember when you got your orders to go out to Palestine?
Well, the orders must have been, I suppose, either January or February.
How did you get out there?
We went by boat to Cherbourg, by train to Marseille, by boat to Haifa.
Were there any stops on the journey?
I remember at Cherbourg, we had, I think, most of a day. And in Marseille, I think we were there. Incidentally, the arrival in Marseille was the coldest night I'd ever had, and I think because, you know, it can be, with these northerly winds, it can turn, and there were icicles hanging off the train about that long. Anyhow, the following day was quite hot. We weren't, I think, there more than 2 or 3 days at the most.
Did you get any general impression of France as you were going through it?
No. I mean, we're in a sleeper. It's quite a comfortable train and so on. But I never talked to anybody.
What was the sort of reaction of the regiment when they heard they were going abroad and going off to the
event? I think they were rather excited. I mean, because it was obvious. I mean, there'd been a lot of talk and so on, but I think everybody was under the impression that we would be going abroad. And I can remember the CO and so on, sort of, he seemed to be certain that we wouldn't be sort of just going to France. We would, you know, definitely be in the Middle East or somewhere, a long way away. And of course, he was, I think, thought in Bulgaria or some funny place. But it wasn't a surprise that we were going to Palestine when we were told.
What happened when you got there?
Well, we went to a place called Gadira, which was north of Jaffa. And we were there for a month or two. And then we went to another place called Nathania, which has been quite in the news lately, some distance south of Jaffa. It was just purely a strip of coastal country with hardly, there were one or two houses not far away. Otherwise, now it's, I believe, a very busy town. On the sea, within a sort of couple of hundred yards of the sea.
What were you actually doing within the regiment when you were in those camps?
Well, we constantly, we used to, it was the same sort of training because there was no shooting there, but we used to go out, it might be 20, 30 miles, and doing the usual things. It was always the same sort of drill.
Movement and deployment.
Yeah, exactly. There was a shooting place called Arslouche at the south of Palestine, somewhere near in the, I think, pretty well desert. I think not the whole regiment never went there, but I think officers and maybe a few others went. But not a great deal.
Did you do any training with other arms, infantry, for example? Or?
Well, I don't remember that. No, I don't think we did.
What was the political atmosphere in Palestine like at that time? Did you get any impression of that?
Well, I mean, I think, of course, I've always wondered who invented the 1st Cavalry Division, which consisted of the Household Cavalry, the Greys, I think. Of course, at that time, a lot of the yeomanry regiments were all horse. They were still cavalry, and they all went out. And, I mean, I thought that it sounded rather like whoever did have this idea, his mind must have been working where Allenby's left off in the First War. But I think it must have been that we were supposed to be a sort of police force. Because there was no hint of there being any war there at that time. But there they were. There were three yeomanry gunner regiments. All the rest were cavalry. And so, as far as we were concerned, we had, say, they weren't proper towers. We had vehicles that pulled guns about. And the cavalry, when we went off in the autumn to the desert, the cavalry were still there, but of course they then took part in the Syria campaign. And they were still cavalry then. And I believe the last charge in the history of the British Army took place during that war. And then when that was over, they were immediately turned into tanks. But that was quite a lot later than the autumn of 1940.
While you were there at that time, did you get involved in doing any police or internal security duties?
No, I can't remember that. Everything was very quiet. There was not the slightest sign of any sort of trouble or insurrection and so on. It was remarkably, because as you know, there had been a lot of trouble in the 30s there. And I think the idea must have been this might well go on. I mean, the sort of thing I can remember is, apart from the training, we spent a day occupying a kibbutz because it was a good place to observe or put guns in or something. And they were all quite happy in there and gave us meals and tea and whatnot. I think the Jews were very cooperative. I was particularly stung by what was a minor thing, but from your point of view. But we went out one evening to Tel Aviv, which is, you know, I kept saying Jaffa, but Jaffa was the Arab part. Tel Aviv was a Jew. They were side by side. I had a camera, and I foolishly left it, I think, on the mudguard of a vehicle over there, and of course it disappeared. And a week or two later, there was an advertisement, I think, and we had a sort of local paper that the Leica had been found, and if the owner got onto a certain address. Which I did, and a youngish fellow, about 20, Jew, appeared with this thing, and handed it out, for which I was, because a Leica camera was a fairly valuable thing even then. And all he wanted me to do was something I wasn't allowed to do, and that was to write a letter of all about it in the local paper.
What do you think his purpose was?
To get to show how honest the Jews were.
Well, what about the
and
Arabs?
Cooperative.
Cooperative. What about the Arabs? Did you have any contact with them at all?
Well, a little. We went out. One or two of them invited us to meals, and you know, we all, which was always sheep, and you sort of ate with your fingers and so on. And I think we have, some of us did that possibly more than once. But it was all very friendly and all fairly near to where we were bivouacked. And I can't remember the slightest trouble with the Jews. I mean, my battery, we went to Nablus for a time, which was... I mean, something which is a part of any trouble now, it's always mentioned. Again, it was perfectly quiet, no trouble. The only thing I remember troubled by dogs making the most awful row outside our bedroom windows. And I remember knocking one off with a revolver.
You were saying that you didn't get the new guns until you went to Egypt.
That's right.
I think you went to Egypt. Did you have much warning that you were going to move to Egypt from Palestine?
I can't remember. I think it must have been a week or two,
How did you get to Egypt?
All the vehicles.